You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the law offices of Pretori Law in Tysons, Virginia. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, David Kunzman, Pretori Law, William Tidwell Cressa, Gray Kanapask, who is KFA Wealth Management Group, and Josh Levy, Brunch Digital, Les Small and Vistage. And Les, can you give us a rundown on who we have on the show today, please?
Sure. We have Tony Frazier, President, Radiant Solutions. Kevin Robbins, Managing Director at Wolfden Associates. Olivia Trevisani-Bowker, CEO at Amivero. And Steve Martin, Founder, Pace Harmon. I'd
like to introduce our first guest, Tony Frazier, President of Radiant Solutions. Tony, what is Radiant Solutions? What are you guys doing?
So Radiant Solutions is a geospatial services company that's focused on helping national security and commercial customers understand and navigate our changing planet.
Huh, interesting. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Northeast Ohio, a town called Canton.
Mm-hmm. And how large or how small is this team at work? How large or small is the business? How many people?
So we have about 1,000 people at Radiant.
About 1,000 people. You're originally from Ohio. And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have a younger brother and a younger sister.
Uh-huh. And what was going on with you in your childhood, 8 to 14 years old?
Well, my parents split when I was young, so mm-hmm. still in grade school. My mom was a single parent raising three children.
Uh-huh. What were you doing? What kind of sports were you playing 8 to 14?
I played lots of sports. Coming up, my mom liked to keep us busy. So played baseball, did some track, wrestling, but gravitated towards football as my main sport.
What was your role on the football team? What kind of stuff did you do there?
So I played guard and linebacker, mm-hmm. And in terms of the positions, and then over time, became a leader of the team, so captain of the football team.
Uh-huh. And something happened when you were about 15 years old. What was that?
Yeah, so going into my junior year of high school, third game of the season, I blew out my knee. So had a tore 3 or 4 ligaments in my knee, and so had about a year when I had to get surgery and then rehabilitation.
So what did that do to you? What did you learn from that period of time where you were out of football for about a year that has anything to do with business?
I think one of the things it taught me was that the importance of hard work and persistence in getting what you want.
Uh-huh. You mentioned about the you used the word delayed gratification in the green room. What was that all about?
So I I had a it was a long road back. I mean, it was 3 months on crutches, 9 months of rehabilitation to go into my senior year, and ultimately we were able to win the league championship that year. I made All-State, and so the need to kind of put in the hard work every day, training sessions in the morning, lifting in at night. It was all kind of the building blocks to be able to accomplish what I wanted.
Lester?
Yeah, you had mentioned that you grew up, it was a single-parent household, just your mom.
Mm-hmm.
How did that impact you, just growing up in that environment, being the oldest of three?
I think it taught, my mom was really focused on making sure we had a better life for ourselves, and so she had very high expectations, for us, mm-hmm. heavy focus on education, and also in taking care of business.
What did she do?
She was a public servant, so she worked for a local town where she led a housing rehabilitation unit. She helped close to 1,000 families get grants and loans to be able to repair their roofs, fix plumbing.
Were you aware of what she was doing when she was doing all that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was. She held down that job, mm-hmm. Worked other jobs.
Yeah. David, what do you got?
Tell us about Coach Wakefield.
So Coach Wakefield was the head football coach at my high school, Massillon Perry High School. He led a team that came from very different backgrounds, different socioeconomic ethnicities. And, he had high expectations for us. So one of the sayings he told me then, which I still use now with my team and family, is, you get better or worse every day. You never stay the same.
Dave, William, what do you got? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm wondering about your mom. Obviously very inspirational. Mm-hmm. You've got two siblings. Sometimes great parents aren't enough. It takes more than that. Have your siblings also found the same kind of success you have? You've gone to an Ivy League school. You're running a major organization. What do they do?
So my brother is, he runs a regional distribution center for Toyota. He's been with them for mm-hmm. 17 years mm-hmm. and done really well. My sister is a cardiologist at Duke University, mm-hmm. so she's
We also understand
well.
That, you know, when you managed to play college football and also study, what was going on? Where was the drive coming from? What was that all about?
So... I love football, you know, growing up, but, you know, again, you know, my mom was very focused on us getting education as a way to create opportunity.
Uh-huh.
So when I went to Penn, you know, I was an engineer. There weren't many engineers on the Penn football team. And I remember having a conversation with a coach about my priorities, and he asked me to go to a film session that conflicted with an engineering class, and I told uh-huh. him, look, you know, I got to focus on my future.
Wow. Greg.
You told us you grew your business from 250 people to 1,000 people in a very short period of time through acquisitions. Tell me about, you know, how growing up, how were you able to, what did you learn growing up to help you, you know, pull that together?
I think one of the things that you learn playing football is that you need to bring diverse teams together to focus on a common objective. And you know, when I started getting involved in acquisitions, you know, you have a lot of small companies that had more of a family orientation to them, but getting them to focus on a new mission, a new purpose, and something bigger themselves, there are a lot of parallels there.
Mm-hmm. Josh, what do you think?
So, I understood you were injured when you were playing football. How did that translate to you being able to focus on or refocus yourself and your academia and studies?
I think it level set what was important. In growing up in Canton, Ohio, it's home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know, most kids think about playing in Big Ten college football team and then playing in the pros. And so, having the injury, made it clear that, there was, I needed to take a broader view. I think, it also helped highlight the importance of education. And so now with the company I run, we're very focused, it's a learning culture. There's people that, we can help make their lives better, by kind of skilling them around, new technology and, how it applies, to what is a growing field.
You seem to be the kind of guy that learns from your mistakes. I mean, when you're going down one path, if it doesn't quite work, it's like, what can I learn here? Where'd you get that from? Where'd that come from?
I think some of it comes from my, the situation I grew up in. So, there's not only learning from my mistakes, but learning from other people's, mistakes.
What are you talking about? What do you mean? Your dad wasn't there.
That's right. My dad wasn't there. And so my dad, he made some bad mistakes, in his life, that led to, my parents split, and she was trying to, put us in a positive environment, away from him. And so seeing some of the mistakes he made, where he was, he had opportunity, I was the first male in my family to graduate from college. He had a football scholarship at a college, and then, took a path where he didn't finish. It
wow.
made me motivated, mm-hmm. to succeed.
Yeah.
Where does the courage come from in a young teen who's living this rite of passage, has this legacy in front of you as well from your dad, where football is the thing, and then all of a sudden it's gone from you? Where do you have, or maybe courage isn't the right word, but where does the courage come from to make the change, to pursue something down a different path?
I think that the for me, it's about competing and winning, and it's just about shifting the aperture on what is going to motivate you, but still have a lot of the same characteristics of playing sports. And so that's how I've approached business. I mean, the you know, the focus on establishing a team, you know, bringing together different talents, but finding a way to win.
So you were able to make that translation.
So a team is a team. Winning is winning, and a team is a team, whether it's football or business. It's all the same stuff to you.
I think that's right.
Uh-huh. That's fascinating. And this engineering thing, were you in love with engineering, or was that part of the ride?
I think it I was, you know, always took science and math. And you know, I also came from, you know, a family of builders. You know, so I mentioned kind of what my mom did to help people, you know, rebuild their homes. My grandfather was a bricklayer. You know, so I had that. So being able to build technology and then build companies.
What's the website address of this organization known as Radiant Solutions?
It's radiantsolutions.com.
Radiantsolutions.com. We've been speaking with Tony Frazier, president of Radiant Solutions, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we'll be back in a moment right after this break.
Yeah, nice job.
Thanks.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Kevin Robbins, Managing Director of Wolf Den Associates. Kevin, what is Wolf Den Associates? What are you guys doing?
Wolf Den is a strategy and management consulting firm that helps participants in the federal market accelerate their growth.
Wow. How large or how small is this organization?
About 100 employees now, and we serve about 300 clients.
And how did you get a job with this company?
Actually, started it back in 2009.
You started the business. Where are you from originally?
So, a place called Glenarm, Maryland, is about 40 minutes north of Baltimore.
Uh-huh. And how many brothers and sisters?
I'm the only.
What makes an only child special?
Your peers growing up are your parents, and so you tend to sort of have a probably more mature, earlier worldview.
Uh-huh. 8 to 14 years old, what was going on with you?
Mom and dad were working, so I had a lot of free time in the afternoons as a latchkey kid. Idle hands being the devil's workshop. I taught myself how to cook and then started a couple businesses around the neighborhood.
Like what kind of businesses did you start?
Started off mowing lawns and then eventually started, odd as it may sound, a belt making business.
Tell us about how did you know that there was a market for belts and what was involved in doing this?
Sure. So we all had a pretty strict dress code, and you're always looking for a little flair, a little way to differentiate yourself in a crowd of 100 guys.
Mm-hmm.
Walking through the mall one day, saw this really bright climbing rope, and they were selling, you know, $30 a piece, these manufactured belts. And I said, gee, I could buy the rope myself and make the belts for a fraction of that, and I bet people would like them.
So what happened?
Made one for myself as a prototype. It was hot pink and fluorescent yellow, and in retrospect, pretty garish, especially paired with a blue blazer and khakis. Wore it in, and after getting the eye roll from the administrator saying, well, you're technically in the dress code, so we can't say anything, instantly, you know, by recess, people wanted to know where they could find them.
So you understand marketing. You understand where there's a demand, the supply. You understand the whole thing about business from an early age, 12 years old, buying and selling belts. What kind of jobs did you have as a kid, and what happened to that plant nursery?
Yeah, I've had almost every odd job you can have, from dishwasher, prep cook, short order cook, you name it. First real long-term job I had, 16, 17, was working in a big nursery, Valley View Farms. They have a garden shop that's 20-some employees, and you've got to manage all of the pesticides and chemicals and everything that can go into a plant. You also have to diagnose all of the problems people come in with. You know, I've got this spot on this leaf. What is it? Can you help me get rid of it?
Yeah.
Well,
you didn't have to, but you mentioned earlier in the green room that you memorized all the chemicals and all the other kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I've always been a little bookish, blessed with a pretty good memory, too, and liked creative problem solving. And so I never thought those would get applied to plants and their ailments.
So what happened?
They did.
So what happened there?
They run us through, you know, seasonal hires. They run us through a quick crash course to get everybody up to a common level of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty clear to my boss, Jimmy Benner, that I was able to memorize this stuff pretty quickly. I was fast on my feet, pretty good with customers, and he put me out in front of the garden shop at 16.
Uh-huh. And there's more to it than that, because what I understand is he put you in charge of 60 employees, most of whom were older, and you were opening and closing the place at the age of 16. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, there are 60 total employees. 20 were in the garden shop, and I would regularly open or close, and sometimes I'd pull a double on the weekends.
All right, David.
So as an only child, how did you, and having a lot of time to yourself, how did that translate to managing people who are older than you?
So, again, I mentioned at the outset, as an only child, your parents are your peers. And so the age difference doesn't matter nearly as much. And so for me, it was not very awkward. I was used to having people much older than me as my friends. I think for them, there was probably a little resentment and an awful lot of show me.
David?
As an only child, did your parents project onto you that they wanted the perfect student, the perfect athlete, the perfect whatever?
It was less sort of, you know, Plato's form of something, right? There wasn't an ideal we were striving towards, but both my folks were self-made, and my dad was pretty tough at pushing and saying, hey, look, you know, you've been given a lot more than a lot of people, and with that comes the responsibility to do that much more because you've gotten a head start. You got to use it.
What do you mean he told you were given more than you have to get? Well, what's that all about? What are you talking about?
You know, he grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and you know, always felt like he was sort of envious of folks that had a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up kind of upper middle class, you know, he I think was terrified. I empathize now with my own two sons. How do you instill that work ethic in your own kid when they've grown up in relative comfort compared to where you started?
But your dad was a doc.
He was.
But he didn't take it for granted, though.
Yeah, Greg? He was an internist. He had private practice. And, you know, I remember...
So you're 12 years old and you decide to start a belt business. I mean, how do you market that? How do you sell it? I mean, tell us a little bit about that, Kevin.
So I think I read the demand signal right, and then I think the belts kind of sell themselves. It's very hard to miss in a sea of drab blues and browns a fluorescent pink or a flash of hot yellow, and once you show up with those, it becomes, oh, I've got a green one. Can I get a blue one? Hey, I like the blue one. How about a pink one?
So you cross merchandise, William.
Yeah, so your parents were very successful folks. How did they keep you grounded? It sounds like very early on you started in a lot of blue-collar jobs.
Yeah,
tell us
a story about the Mercedes and the dishwasher.
Yeah, so before I could drive, I had a job washing dishes and prep chefing at a place called Pierce's Plantation, which at the time was a pretty nice restaurant. And my dad would, you know, come home early from work, drive me over, drop me off. And he made a point of, particularly in warmer months, dropping me off in his Mercedes convertible by the back door of the kitchen, not the front door of the restaurant, so that when all the kitchen crew was on their smoke break, they would see the affluent kid dropped off by his dad, and none of them ever let me forget it on any of the shifts I worked there.
What are you talking about?
There's a lot of razzing. Kitchens are, it's odd in an era of Me Too, but what goes on in commercial kitchens is almost unable to be printed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of physical and sort of emotional abuse.
So why would your father do that?
I think, you know, I didn't play team sports growing up, and I think he knew that there's a real risk if you don't get that kind of what I'll call kind of patina on you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a risk of becoming somewhat coddled.
So your dad helped you learn about people by dropping off in his Mercedes at the back door of the restaurant. Lester?
Yeah, why was it important for you to stand out and differentiate yourself? And how does that serve you now?
Sure. Growing up as an only child in a rural area, you don't have a big peer group. And it's, you know, probably a little tougher to make friends initially. And so I think I've always been a little bit of a classic extrovert in that regard, always looking for that way to stand out, that way to make friends.
So how does it translate now for how you lead and run your company?
Yeah, we are very different. Wolfden is definitely not like other consulting firms that are out there. Most firms are named after the founders or something iconic or acronyms. There's not
so
a lot
got
of.
You've got Wolfden. Why Wolfden?
Wolfden is it's a couple things. We like the social characteristics of wolves. They look after each other. They're apex predators. They're strong for their size. And we really just, more than anything, we wanted to have a firm that stood out from the crowd, and it wasn't going to be Landu Robbins Associates or something falsely patriotic just because we're in D.C.
Mm-hmm. So what does make the firm special?
Two things, really. Absolute dedication to putting the customer first, which a lot of people say it's difficult to actually do. And I believe people when they tell me they've actually foregone revenue to make things right for customers. It's when it's real, not just a mantra on a marketing brochure.
Uh-huh.
And the other, probably equally as important, is it's a true meritocracy. We say best idea wins, which is great if you create a lot of good ideas. If not, it can feel like the tyranny of the best ideas.
Uh-huh. What's the website address of this organization, Wolfden Associates?
WolfdenAssociates.com.
Let me have that one more time.
wolfdenassociates.com.
We've been speaking with Kevin Robbins, Managing Director of Wolf Den Associates, here on Executive Leaders Radio. It's your host, Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this break. Nice. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Olivia Trivisani-Balker, CEO of, how do you pronounce the company's name?
Amivero.
Amivero. What is Amivero?
Amivero is a DevSecOps big data engineering firm focusing on homeland security.
All right. And where are you from originally?
Born in Brooklyn, but spent the first 18 years of my life overseas.
Where?
Everywhere.
Tell us.
Every 2 years, Turkey, Thailand, Trinidad, South Africa, Haiti, Guinea.
Why were you moving
Croatia?
So many times? Why'd you move so many times?
My parents were Foreign Service, so State Department.
How many brothers and sisters?
An older sister.
And what kind of sports did you play as a kid?
So I was softball and basketball.
And basketball, what was your role on the team?
Guard.
What's the personality trait of a guard?
Kind of, you know, broad view. You're near the point guard, so you help and assist so that they can shoot as well as shoot, but you're also kind of looking out for the whole team.
What's that have to do with the real role with this organization known as Amivero?
So I think it is, you know, kind of seeing the big picture as a leader, having strategy, vision, also being able to always see when somebody's available so that you can pass, taking advantage of opportunities.
All right, so you started this business. And where'd you go to college?
Emerson College for a bit.
Did you graduate?
I did not.
Really?
I did not. I after being overseas, I went to Boston for my freshman year, went through some culture shock.
Do you feel that you were crippled not finishing college, starting this business?
I have always had a little bit of insecurity about it, but it's never stopped me. And
William, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you've got an older sister who moved with you 9 or 10 times growing up. What did you learn from her? What did she learn from you?
So being the typical older sister and also into sports, she kept hitting varsity before me, the grades, the science fair. So definitely kept, you know, pinching at my competitive nerves. But one thing I've also learned from her and gained from her is she knows me. She's one of the few people that do, because of the inconsistency in who we had as friends growing up. And so she just keeps me in line with who I am, keeps me focused on my instincts.
So you work with your sister?
I do.
And she helps you keep focused on your instincts. So your sister, what are you talking about? I thought business was all blood and guts. What are you talking about, your instincts?
No, I mean, I'll have challenges sometimes making a decision, and she very quickly says, go with your gut, and I do, and it always turns out.
Wow. It's instinct. Great.
Yeah.
Well, Olivia, you told us earlier you grew up overseas and really have seen some crisis type situations, and it seems like you've taken that to your job today. Tell us a little bit about that connection. And
Yeah, so I did. My father specialized in crisis management, and always at the hardest times, you know, the bombing at Nairobi embassy, apartheid in South Africa, oil embargo of Haiti. So I've seen a lot of people less fortunate, and so I really have a passion for homeland security and the pride of being American and what we have here and the way that we're able to help foreign countries as well.
You mentioned last night and this morning. What was going on? You got up at 6 this morning. What was that all about?
Yeah, my son is probably on the way to the hospital right now. Yeah. He had a temperature and sick, but I support Customs and Border Protection, and because of the hours I was going to miss today, I was up earlier in order to continue to support the mission.
So you're really committed to the mission. You're really committed to, and you're an anticipator as well.
Yes.
You don't like surprises, it sounds like.
That's true. I'm some would say controlling.
Well, it sounds to me like you're an anticipator and an entrepreneur. Josh, what are you picking up?
So, yeah, you mentioned earlier that you used to sneak out a lot when you were traveling and whatnot. I'm curious how, you know, you were exposed to all these different cultures. How has that impacted your outlook today?
Yeah, I mean, I am like the least judgmental person, obviously, with the varieties of culture and people. And so I'm really looking for the strengths in everyone, because everyone has unique abilities that I can apply to helping a greater cause.
You're telling me that you lived in all these 18 countries or something like this and traveled and saw like really difficult circumstances. And you're telling me one of the benefits of that is that it gave you a broader understanding of everybody's strengths, and you're using that in business now?
That's correct, because they're, you know, in when you're a diplomat or you're trying to be diplomatic in these environments, you know, I attended some trainings that said women are to be seen and not heard or things like that. You know, you then take advantage of the opportunity and try to find new things about everybody, try to make connections. And when you're leaving friends every 2 years, you quickly learn how to make friends and just appreciate everybody for what they bring to the world.
That? David?
Growing up in these challenging environments overseas, obviously safety is a big concern. You've got to really pay attention to things like how you go to school in the morning. What did you learn from that and from your parents, and how to manage those risks and how it applies to your business?
Yeah, so I definitely am a risk taker, and am okay to fail, because I've seen people fail and then succeed. But I think that, you know, just keep trying. Oh, change is good, right? It's the only constant. I grew up actually having traveled so much, I'm always kind of little, you know, needing some change. I had to ask for some help because I was moving so often.
Yeah, tell us that story about what happened there.
So I, you know, I've been here in Virginia now for, I don't know, 15 years, and I've moved 6 or 7 times, and it's just because I get a little. But the Foreign Service Youth Foundation, they said, you know, I need to just rearrange my furniture instead. It's a lot less expensive.
That's not working. So you got. I mean, you're sort of like addicted to change. I mean, because you moved around so many times, and you moved around. So they said move the furniture around as opposed to buying and selling houses.
So that I could get, you know, that difference. But it was not enough. So, you know,
but it sounds to me like, you know, you really developed a tight bond with your family because you moved so much, and your sister really understands what's needed to ground you in terms of business.
I speak to all three of them multiple times a day, every day.
Wow. William, what were you thinking there?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you've with all your travels, you've seen the best and the worst in the world. Our country is at a really unique spot where we couldn't be more divided today. What would you say to people out there about this country, based on what you've seen?
They should feel a lot of pride for being given the opportunities that we have here in the United States. And yes, there's challenges, but nothing compared to what else is out there.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned also something about the culture shock earlier. What was the hardest part about coming back here, and how did you actually learn to deal with that?
That's a good question. The way I learned to deal with it was to turn to my family and to build my confidence, which happened to be through work. I got into sales, and that immediate gratification kind of kept me, you know, feeling good about myself and made me feel valuable. So
how does it translate now into the things that you do and the way you lead and run your business?
So again, sort of mission first. I also care a lot about people. You know, my father, he did a lot for the foreign countries that we lived in. At the same time, he sacrificed a lot of family time in order to support them. So, you know, I'm trying to, I'm establishing and have established a culture where it's not about work-life balance, because that's never going to exist. So instead, it's why not just enjoy the work? It's going to be part of life. You're going to be there a lot of time. Let's try to make it where, you know, you don't need the work-life balance. We're all just having a good time and helping others.
So you're finding joy in everything you do as opposed to work is work.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. How'd you learn that?
Seeing hardships, I guess, you know, just, I mean, I also saw the most beautiful sunsets of South Africa on safaris, right? I saw when I used to volunteer at the orphanages in Soweto in South Africa, they'd never heard music before. So when we did a bake sale at school and bought them a radio, and for them to hear music for the first time and then dance, I mean, dancing is one of the most amazing experiences. And the fact that they had their teenagers, some of them, and had never even heard music before. I mean, you just have to, it's a, life is wonderful.
And what was the, what happened in Rome?
So this is an an example of where you don't, you grow up overseas and you just think it's a little normal. So I was in boarding school senior year, and I used to sneak out all the time and then sneak into the Colosseum or the Roman Forum and, you know, play Frogger and drink wine and then go to class in the morning. But you forget that's the Colosseum, know, until you've left the country and everybody
danger,
wants to go visit.
A little bit of danger, too.
Excitement. I like that.
So you've seen. So what's that have to do with building a business?
Well, building a business is exciting. It's the, emotional ups and downs, but really I want to be able to provide for other people, build a company that my son can be proud and enjoy being a part of, as well as everybody.
What's the website address of this organization that is Amivero?
Amivero.com, AMIVERO.com.
Let me have that one more time.
AMIVERO.com.
We've been speaking with Olivia Trevisani-Bowker here on Executive Leaders Radio, CEO of Amivero. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment right after this break.
Oh, wow, that was great.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Steve Martin, who is the founder of Pace Harmon. Steve, what is Pace Harmon? What are you guys doing?
Pace Harmon is a management consulting firm that helps primarily Fortune 500 companies answer the question of insourcing versus outsourcing various business functions.
How large or how small is the team?
About 100 consultants.
Uh-huh. And how'd you get a job with this company?
Founded a company with one of my former partners from Deloitte Consulting about 15 years ago.
And where you from originally?
From the suburbs of Washington, D.C. and Silver Spring, Maryland.
How many brothers and sisters?
Two brothers and a sister.
And where were you in the pecking order?
I was number two.
Number two. All right. What kind of sports did you play as a kid?
A lot of baseball and a lot of basketball growing up.
Uh-huh. What was your role in the baseball team?
Baseball position was a center fielder, leadoff hitter, pitched, and...
Uh-huh. What was your effect on the team? Were you the kid that caused all the trouble, or how'd you affect all your other teammates?
I think it was, you as a leadoff hitter, you have to set the example. You're the first guy up, and you have to get on or you don't, and it sort of sets the pace for the rest of the
game. What's that have to do with your being, it says here, you're the founder of Pace Harmon. What's the similarity between the role you had on the baseball team and what you're doing nowadays?
I think you're, again, setting the pace. You're establishing as a leadoff hitter what's going to happen the rest of the game, at least as far as that first or second inning goes, so... Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier when we were talking in the green room, something happened about the age of four regarding you in baseball. What was that?
Age of four, I have a very vivid memory of sitting on the front porch with my grandfather, first generation American, just watching or listening to the Washington Senators, and there was just a joy in that sort of environment.
What are you talking about? What do you mean a joy? What do you mean?
It was a deep sense of family. It was connected. It was this cocoon-like feeling. That he and my grandmother started, and my parents and siblings sort of participated in.
Where were your grandparents from?
Russia.
Uh huh. And tell me a little bit about how that cocoon that you felt has anything to do with Pace Harmon, this business you started.
It gives us a sense of, it sort of instills a sense of humility and collegiality that is absolutely critical to the success of our company. It really drives our culture.
Mm-hmm. William, what are you picking up? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you grew up, you said, in this great cocoon of a family with a number of siblings. Was there competition amongst the siblings? And if so, how did that help you get the entrepreneurial spirit?
So fierce competition between all of us, and as soon as the competition was over, there were hugs and friendliness. And I think the entrepreneurial spirit comes out of this wanting to sort of win, this, we're always at it sort of, everything is kind of a winner take all, and then this realization at the end of the day that we're doing this as a team as you move into the team sports. Mm-hmm.
Lester?
Yeah, what was mom's role in all of this?
So mother was she worked until the kids were born and sort of was the center of the family. She was the culture of the family.
And what did you take from her that you use today?
Sense of humility, a sense of thinking about others, putting others' interests in front of your own.
Why was that?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned your father is a PhD physicist and a professor. Was there a lot of expectation on you in terms of math and science and your career in studies?
The expectation was not related to the subject. It was related to the work ethic. It was work hard, do the right thing, not specifically the actual physics. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Mr. Rooney.
Mr. Rooney, my sixth grade teacher, was passionate about math up on a whiteboard and just sort of instilled this level of enthusiasm in his students that sort of I take today.
What do you mean you take it today? What are you talking about?
Meaning that you get excited about something, you're going to do better at it and excel at it. And for me, it was math and mm-hmm. in problem solving, which is what we do.
Josh?
Yeah, you talk a lot about your family, and in particular, you've mentioned your grandfather before. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with him and how that has shaped who you are today.
Vivid memories of growing up with him, saw him on a weekly basis, played cards with him, listened to the game, and just a sense of doing the right thing. I mean, everything he taught me was just, you know, again, like my mother, thinking about what others are feeling and doing the right thing.
Greg?
You know, draw some parallels for us between being a dad and a CEO.
As a CEO, you've got to give your colleagues enough rope to pave their own way, but you've got to stay very close to them to make sure that they don't veer off the path. And my wife and I do the same thing with our 8-year-old son.
What do you mean you do the same thing with your 8-year-old son? What are you talking about? You really think there's a parallel between being a CEO and a dad?
I do. I think it's with the son, to answer your question, we don't solve problems for him. We don't help him with his homework. We sort of put him on the path, let him get as far as he can, and when he comes to us or if he's going off course, we help him get back on course.
Greg, did you have another question?
Yeah, getting back to business, what do you look for in your teammates?
In our teammates, we look for a sense of humility, collegiality, team play, a self-awareness, and a deep sensitivity to our clients, a tableside manner, as we call it in our firm.
What do you mean a self-awareness? What are you talking about?
Our clients are paying us a lot of money to serve them, and we've got to have a sense of where they're coming from and what our role is, what our purpose is. And so you have to understand their perspective, not just sort of our own agenda.
So it sounds to me like you're really in the people business. You are really, it's what's really important to you. Oh, it goes back to that cocoon thing, doesn't it?
We are absolutely in a client service business, which our product are our people.
Uh-huh. So you're really concerned about bringing in the right people to begin with, because it's not only how they're going to affect each other, it's how they're going to affect the clients.
That's right. And you can have the smartest consultant in the world. If they don't have a sensitivity and a sense of what the client needs, the effectiveness, the actual output is not presented in a way that is that makes sense to our client.
What's your grandfather tell you every day?
Do the right thing. Think beyond yourself. Realize you're a small piece of a much larger world.
Josh, you have another question there? No.
What is it about your grandfather and your father, the trait they share in common that you've picked up and run with now?
It's very trite sounding, but it's kindness and humility. Both of them just exuded it. It's just a sense mm-hmm. of doing the right thing.
Stephen, what's the website address for this organization, Pace Harmon?
It's paceharmon.com.
Let me have that one more time.
PACEHARMON, paceharmon.com.
We've been speaking with Steve Martin, founder of Pace Harmon, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Lester, can you give us a rundown of who else we had an opportunity of speaking with?
Sure. Tony Frazier, president of Radiant Solutions. We had Kevin Robbins, managing director at Wolf Den Associates. Olivia Trevisani, Bowker, CEO of Amavero. And Steve Martin, founder of Pace Harmon.
Excellent. I would like to thank my co-hosts, including David Kunzman, Pretori Law, William Tidwell, Cressa, Greg Konopasek. Did I pronounce your name
you
correct?
You got it, Herb.
KFA Wealth Management, Josh Levy, who is Brunch Digital, and even less small in Vistage, for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hope you're providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, it's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, thank you for joining us today, and do have a nice day. Bye-bye.
All right. Great job.